music. Oh.
Yes.
Oh, that was good. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Restitching the Tapestry. We hope that you're all doing well. We're on episode 126. We are inching closer to 150, which is pretty cool.
$1.50.
I love it. I know. So, oh my goodness, it's been a week. What have you been up to? How have you been? What's been going on in the world of Ari?
The grind. I've got to read a whole screenplay this. I've been putting off my homework. Don't tell my teacher. I've been putting off my homework. I've got
homework. Your secret's safe with me. It's safe with me.
I'm so bad. But so I've been working on my tarot channel. I'm almost to 200 subscribers on my water channel. And I have been. The thing about it is I've been putting off my homework, but I've been thinking of new scripts to write, like new screenplays to write. And there's one that I'm working on about this, because I always go to this donut shop to get like breakfast sandwiches, and I'm making a script about this, like, kind of like based on this donut shop that I go to. And it's from the customer perspective. It's called How Can I Help You? And it's about these three ladies in this donut shop, like having their little, it's kind of like Clerks, but it's like old ladies in their little donut shops, kind of like Steel Magnolias or something, or like Magnolia.
I love that. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
That's going to be fun.
It's going to be great.
Anything else exciting happening this week for you?
Just slipping, hopping and bopping, living my best life.
Just hopping and bopping. Woo. Okay. I've been obsessing all week about a variety of things. So about a week ago, we got a lot of rain, and like we got like 3
inches like of buckets rain. Of rain. My power went out.
Yeah. Like, and so I went down in our basement the next day and noticed an inch of water sitting in a corner along a wall. Mm-hmm. That had seeped in from outside. So I was just like, absolutely not. We just bought this house. I'm not dealing with a water leakage in our foundation. So like, I tried to troubleshoot and figure out what it was. I felt kind of straight troubleshooting everything. But we determined that our gutters, which were buried under a flower bed, were not high enough above the ground for the water to run off during a storm. So it just would turn the flower bed into a lake. Wow. So, fast forward a few days later, the other big event of the week, I was fixing our gutters, and I like put down like these little like spouts to help the water flow better, and I got stung by a wasp while I was doing it, because I was right next to like the area in the siding of the house where they were, and I must have like bumped into it or messed with it, and I got stabbed.
We were making jokes in the back room that you got stung actually by white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, the Kennedys.
Right.
It's sort of like, honey, will you pass the green beans? Oh. And it's sort of like, I guess.
Only if you switch back to being straight, then I'll pass you the green beans.
Honey, we talked about this. We had an agreement.
So suffice it to say, I used to be extremely allergic to wasps, and I had an allergic reaction, but not as bad as I used to. So I had to like emergency go and get Benadryl, and then I was fine the rest of the day. But I was just like, I'm not dealing with water or wasps. This is not happening. This is just not happening.
It feels like you have like this chaos effect, that it's like you find one problem and then it spirals out into another problem and then it spirals out into another problem.
Well, so it's interesting you mentioned that, because I had a moment earlier in the week where I was like, am I manifesting chaos right now? Like, am I like manifesting these, you know, not huge things, but like small annoyances to happen. But then I was like, no, I don't think I am.
No, it's sort of like one of those puzzle games about the houses where you have to like fix up one part of the yard and then you have to fix up another part of the yard, the garden gate or whatever, or you're the butler fixing up the house to make a mansion.
And then something else falls apart conveniently at the same moment. So it's like this constant cycle of fixing everything.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah, that was a thing. That was a thing. But you know what? Everything went well. It was great. I managed to get I got the water problem fixed. That is the bigger problem, in my opinion. So Taylor's here. Hello, Taylor. Taylor just moved into a new house as well, which is super exciting. Congratulations. I was just ranting to Ari about like my house issues so far. So
Taylor's the one manifesting chaos. New house and baby. Oh, goodness.
A lot of stuff going on.
Absolutely.
New stuff going on. So, current event snapshot. What's been going on lately?
Oh my goodness. So we have Trump indicted again. Oh goodness.
Is this the third time or the fourth time? I cannot remember.
I don't know. So a lot of people are, I know that there's a little bit of excitement about Trump getting indicted and stacking up indictments OnlyFans people stacking up the bills. But the thing about it is, I think about it as like, these are serious charges. These are Absolutely. Serious moments. And like, we should treat this with some solemnity, that this is not like a chance to celebrate. This is American justice. This is like American justice system doing its thing. And this is like, this is like wrongs being righted, and that we are working through what could have been the 4 years of his administration doing very bad things. And we're finally working out that there are consequences for actions that have taken place, and that we're finally you don't get to get away with everything that you do. It's sort of like he thought that he could do things during his presidency with no consequences. And we're now finding out that there is actually going to be some justice, and that it's sort of like, this is the karma for the stuff that he's done during the 4 years of his administration. I think that there's some stuff that, you know, obviously the appointments that he's made and some of the legal stuff that he's done, is sticking, you know, the presidential, you know, decrees or whatever, the presidential, you know, announcements that he made, where some of those have still been in place, and that unworking some of his legal, you know, stuff that he's put out there, it's slow work to undo all of undo some of that stuff, but I think that it's the healing process of some of the chaos that he has sown in his presidency. We're finding out that, you know, there is actually karma for these actions that he's created.
Well, and I don't think people realize just how long the healing process is going to take. Like, honestly, like, what's happened over the past several years has set us back in a variety of ways, like decades, right? Decades. So like, we're going to be spending a lot of time unconditioning, unlearning, like trying to rebuild like the social progress that had been made, you know,
and public opinion about like trust and leadership and like, about
and in the system itself too,
and trust in media, like just like the way that people believe and think, like it's so, take like the forest fires, even like people don't believe that the Canadian forest fires weren't started by human hands. Like they think that people like, because I was seeing like video that of like prescribed burns, like back burning, you know, like when you have like a forest fire, they'll do like back burning as a way of like trying to control the fire. And people were using videos of that back burning as like evidence of firefighters starting the fires. And so like people didn't understand like basic like firefighting techniques. And so it was sort of like it was people who are conspiracy theorists saying like, and I heard it in several places too, that like it's these QAnon people who think that like, you know, that climate change, things like that are like kind of that using those Canadian wildfires as like, you know, it is all like those Biden policies, that it's sort of like that they're being, you know, that they use those Canadian wildfires, that they got started by human hands, and that they were created to create a controversy about upping gas prices and things like that. And it's just it's all like this weird conspiracy to push forward what they think are bad policies or something. I don't know. It's so weird. I don't even understand it.
Well, it's very difficult to understand because like there's very little logic in it. Well, like I mean, you mentioned QAnon, for example. Like I have a very good friend who has a family member who is QAnon, right? And this person's entire life has changed simply because of the sheer focus on conspiracies all the time, right? And it's affected friendships, families, memberships, like family member relationships. That's what I'm trying to say. It's affected a lot, and it's just really scary to
But
like.
it's some of the conspiracies that they believe are just, they seem almost incoherent at times. They don't even seem like they go down like coherent rabbit holes. Like I don't understand what the point of some of the conspiracy theories like mean. Like where the logic is for what they're trying to, I mean, like they think that like they're trying to be like two steps ahead of them, but if like you try to work out the logic of what they're trying to say, it doesn't actually like lead to anywhere like specific. It just it's like a weird, it doesn't go down, it's just like going down a weird loop rabbit hole that doesn't actually mean anything, and like it contradicts itself almost.
So Taylor has some comments. Homes are nightmares, absolutely. And then Taylor said, my contractor is a conspiracy theorist, and it's, ugh, that is not fun. Do you ever have like people in your life who like, you know, aren't QAnon, but like they might say something that they've read from a QAnon person, and you're like,
It's like, where did you get that information? Did you read it on
it's like you're tiptoeing a little close to like that precipice of.
You're like, it's like you're not QAnon, but like, did you read that off a website that may or may not be Russian?
Absolutely. It's so unhinged. It's so unhinged.
It's like, be careful where you get your information. Like, it's like
So it's funny. Like this is
abcfacts.com, abcfacts123.com.
well, and I think a lot of like so I'm gonna go down like a little tangent here, but I think that a big problem too is that we as millennials especially, we have become so numbed to major historic events happening that we're just like, oh, what's happening now? Like, oh, what's next? Kind of a thing. So like when we encounter people like this, it's kind of just like, okay, you know, because we've just become so used to it. I don't know if you feel that way, but I have
I
felt
watched
that
a
way.
TikTok that recently explained how I've become skeptical about events. So here's the thing. When we were kids, we would say things like, I read it on the internet, and our parents would tell us, you know, you can't believe everything you read online. You can't believe everything you read online. And then we got older, and our parents were like, oh, I read it online. It must be true. And we're like, you can't believe everything you read online. Where did you read that?
It's been such a role reversal. And I don't it's so wild to me. It's so wild to me. Godzilla Kiru is here. Hello.
Hello.
Taylor says, that's my, I think that means
mother-in-law.
Ooh. Ooh. Yeah, I have some family like that too. Well, do we want to do the show mission statement now?
Yes.
It's my turn this week, isn't it?
Oh,
I believe it is. We live in a dynamic society where social media shapes us by creating greater opportunities for connection. It has led to a developing understanding of the adversity many marginalized communities face, the powers causing the adversity, and those who act as bystanders as atrocities take place in real time. Our goal with this show is to make connections and have challenging conversations about social topics, current events, pop culture, and art. Together, let's weave the threads of understanding with what privilege we have in order to learn, educate, and create in a world that's growing.
Yay!
Oh, yay. So let's do a recap on what we talked about last week. So we, like, when we were planning this topic a few weeks ago, actually it's more like a few months ago at this point, we decided to do two parts to the topic of being woke, because obviously that's been a huge buzzword that's been weaponized in some unsavory ways and kind of like muddling the actual meaning of the word and the intent of the word. So we spent much of last episode defining it and then talking about its uses in a variety of different situations and how some groups, especially groups on the right, have kind of weaponized that word as a way to attack social awareness and social progress. So yeah. did I summarize the?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. So tonight we wanted to talk about it a little bit further, because we want to figure out like why people use it as an insult, but also talk about like the motivations behind like different uses of it, I think, too. Mm-hmm. So I guess my first question would be, why are people treating the word woke as though it is some sort of insult, right? To give you a quick example, like the other day, did I post a YouTube? It was probably a YouTube short because I get more haters on YouTube shorts. I don't know why, because it's just YouTube. But I had somebody, after I talked about some sort of LGBTQ+ thing, they were like, well, you're just woke, blah, blah, blah. You're part of that woke ridiculousness. And I was just like, in my head, I'm like, that, like, being woke isn't an insult to me. So, like, because it demonstrates social awareness and, you know, all of that jazz. So why are people using it as an insult? Why do they think it's an insult?
I think that, especially people on the right, you get like Republicans and conservatives and like Christian conservatives, using woke as an insult. I think it's because they're trying to like devalue the original use of the word, because woke, when we talked about it in the first part, woke was originally used by the Black community or the BIPOC community as a way of staying alert and aware of the patriarchy or the white man,
the systems.
Yeah. So it's sort of like trying to take that word and devalue it as far as like those original people, the original BIPOC community, and trying to devalue it and trying to turn it on its head. And because it's been co-opted by white people, they're trying to turn it on its head and turn it into an insult by like it's and turn it into something of a devaluation. It's almost narcissistic in a sense, because they're devaluing it and turning it into an insult and turning it back on itself, sort of like that you can't have these empowering words. You have to look at these words as something that is shameful or something that you're not allowed to have. So it's sort of like that they take these words and they devalue them and they bring them down and they make it so that the Black community can't have these words. First of all, that they get these words get co-opted by you know, white people who are trying to you know, take this word and use it for trying to well-meaning white people who want to also be woke to the patriarchy and all of those things. And so you have some people who are hip to lingo, but then it gets co-opted by people who are performative. And so then the more people who start using the lingo, the more watered down it becomes, the more whitewashed it becomes, and the more devalued it becomes, because it's sort of like too many people are getting, too many cooks are in the kitchen, too many people are at the party, and it's getting watered down. And so,
well, it also sounds kind of colonizing too when you think about it, because like how many instances in the past we could note, many throughout history, where like certain communities, like something has been taken from those communities and then like covertly used against them as in a power dynamic, right? So like when I think of this word, and after hearing your description, of course, like that kind of connects back to colonization, because like these huge systems like systemic racism and classism, patriarchy, like all of them are very central to colonization, which is, you know, kind of unsettling to think, right?
But so absolutely, it's basically taking these words that were so important to the Black community, and that they were these words that meant something and that had value, and taking it and devaluing it and making it so that it's almost shameful to use those words, or embarrassing to use those words. Yeah. And so they can't even own the words that they originally had that gave them power. It's taking away their power.
Right. It's super interesting, this trajectory, because like I always have had people say like, well, words don't matter. Like the language people use doesn't matter. But if you like analyze language itself, and look at its progression and how different groups use it, and like the power dynamics, like it's very much a weaponization of language, covert in this type of instance, right? So like when you're adopting one thing, or like not adopting, but like taking something and then using it in that devaluing way. So
it's kind of like how the annoying part of like how white people will use AAVE, like African American Vernacular English. It's that annoying part of like how white people will use that language, even though white people have their own vernacular, which is very rich and very interesting. There's a lot of TikToks about how white people vernacular is very, you know, gosh darn it, and like. You know, gee golly and stuff. White people have their own vernacular, but the last like couple decades, it's been that white people have tried to co-opt African American vernacular and tried to like take words from Black people and you know, co-opt their language and take that power away from them and co-opt this culture that is special to their community. And it's interesting, because that woke is part of that, taking that African American vernacular and trying to okie dokie artichoke. Yeah, exactly. White people have their own vernacular.
I want to quickly note, like, we've been doing well, Godzilla Cairo. How have you been doing?
Hello.
Thank you for joining us tonight. Excellent points. Like, I think that looking at like how it's kind of in, like people perceive it as being like innocently taking words from another community and using it, like that's, you know, and I think that that's something that is part of the conditioning that goes alongside like these different systems too, because like I know myself, I have used words like that before too, where like there are certain words like in the gay community, especially like the word slay, for example. Like I've said that so many times in the past, and that's one that has been
co-opted kind of from the black co-opted, community.
Yeah, by largely white gay men. And then I didn't realize like the gravity of that, right? Mm-hmm. So like it's
or yes queen. Yes queen is also co-opted, right? from the black community as well.
Absolutely. So I've been working toward like being a little bit more conscious of that, because I was just like, ooh, okay, like I don't, being that I am white and cis, like I don't want that to reflect these systems, right? So yeah, Taylor says like it's a huge problem with queer men stealing from black women. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So what's the next thing? Like what's the next thing?
There are people who often criticize wokeness in the media. What does that look like, and what are they actually criticizing?
So I honestly think, especially when they criticize wokeness in the media, like, so I recently, I'm going to use fandom spaces as an example. Is that thunder?
Oh, it's raining where I am right now.
Oh my God. That's, it startled me. I was like, ooh, it startled me and I'm not even there.
If I get cut off, just keep going without me. Okay.
Okay.
If the power goes out.
So like, I'm going to talk about fandom spaces for a second, because I feel like you see this rhetoric a lot in like fandom spaces where like, say you have a show or film that has reached a point where it has like quality representation, right? And like conversations circulating around that representation. And then you'll have people complain that like the studios are kind of caving to wokeness, right? And I think that that's part of what they're criticizing, but truthfully in my brain that translates to, oh, I'm uncomfortable with the fact that there are diverse people represented in front of me, so I'm going to relegate that to just some studio wanting to shove something down my throat, if that makes sense.
And the thing about it is that Hollywood has always made movies, that movies have always had some kind of message. Like that's the whole point of movies, is that they have a message that is supposed to move you in a direction. Even books for the longest time have had messages of a political statement. We have The Grapes of Wrath. You have Les Miserables from Victor Hugo. Mm-hmm. Books have always had some kind of political message, and it goes back farther and farther back into time. That books, movies, TV shows, they've all had a message. And mm-hmm. whether or not we agree with it, it's a moot point. You know what I mean? Just because it's seen as, you know, I mean, that's why they had in the 50s the whole code of conduct council. Mm-hmm. You know, we had the whole McCarthyism during the 50s trying to root out the communists and trying to censor the media. And they were blacklisting people because they mm-hmm. were trying to control what people saw. We had the comics code of conduct with the comics industry trying to control what kids saw in comic books, because they mm-hmm. thought that their comic books were too lewd or too risque or too dangerous yeah. for young minds.
And now we have like groups like Moms for Liberty, for example, who are like trying to like get books banned in libraries for simply representing
LGBTQ. This deserves a whole episode on censorship.
Okay, we should, yeah, we're going to not note that, and we're going to definitely have that as an episode. Taylor mentions the film Barbie. I've not seen that yet, but I've been meaning to go see it.
Absolutely.
I've heard it's really good.
As an aside, did you know that my movie ad is going to be playing during, on August 7th, and it's going to be playing before all of the movies, including the Barbie and the Oppenheimer movie at the mall?
What?
Yes.
That was really loud. I'm sorry. Really? That is so exciting.
Everything's worked out. I have it ready. It's going to be, I have it all ready and worked out with the ad guy. And so yeah, my movie ad is ready.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
That is so cool. I am so excited. That's also huge too. Like that's a huge opportunity.
Bought and paid for.
Right. Taylor, Moms for Erotica. Yes. So honestly, like I really have a difficult time grasping people in those fandom spaces who do that because like, I mean, I feel like if I see representation of an individual from a group who I'm not a part of, like it, like I don't translate to discomfort. Like there's just, I'm not hardwired to translate to being uncomfortable with that. So, I mean, I guess maybe when I like had internalized homophobia and stuff a long time ago, maybe that was the case. But like, to me, when people react that way, I think of it as a lack of education.
I think it has to do with the difference between conservatives and liberals. Mm-hmm. With the liberal group, there's something about celebrating diversity and giving everybody a fair shot. And so there's a sense of when you see somebody who's different from yourself in a group of liberals who is discordant from your view, there's something about seeking to understand them and allow them to live their own way and just trying to seek to understand the perspective and why they believe what they believe. And like, if it goes against the betterment of society, such as people who are, you know, considered deviant, there's something about trying to just fix them for the betterment of society and trying to be fair to everybody as well as society. So like, you know, making sure that bad people go to jail, making sure that good people are, the victims are always taken care of, and making sure that that everybody is treated fairly and responsibly and that all voices are heard. That I feel like that's right. Part of a liberal ideology. With conservatives, it's different that there's something about always just wanting to have kind of a unified ideology, despite having a lot of different opinions and values about their religion, that there are all these different sects of Christianity and conservatism, but they all agree that they believe in God and higher power. So I guess that's kind of where they have their unified vision, but it's sort of like we all agree that we like trucks, beer, and guns, you know? And it's sort of like, we all agree on that, right? And we don't like taxes. And they all sort of kind of have this unified view that everybody should agree on these things and that everybody should have these opinions and that everybody should feel this way. And that like, that's how they feel in like their Republican Party.
And if that, anybody kind of like strays too far outside of that, like it's kind of villainized or like othered to varying degrees.
And right? It's sort of like, get in step, get in step in the Republican Party.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting because they kind of like make everybody kind of like line up and like fall in line under their leaders. And like, they kind of just like, well, I elected him. It doesn't matter what he does. I elected him. I trust him. He knows what he's doing.
Right.
And so liberals will ask more of their leaders than Republicans.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty accurate. So, okay. So the next question, because we've seen people like argue this before, how can being woke go too far at times? Can an infighting between groups cause problems in delivering a packaged message of unity, or people getting too nitty-gritty on details when people's hearts are in the right place of wanting to begin the process of changing? What do you think?
So that's very interesting because I talked about it just now about how liberals, they talk about having allowing for all different voices and things like that. So it does create a problem of unity within the party at times, that you have all of these like voices, and sometimes it can get discordant. And so what it causes with like the Democrats specifically is that sometimes you have, when it comes to bringing together like an issue or a topic, when it comes to like voting, rallying the troops, you know what I mean? Like they, it's not just like falling in line and falling in order. Sometimes it does make it difficult. And I was talking about this with people, that that's part of the problem with the Democratic Party, is that they don't often have like, that part of their problem is party unity, that they don't always just fall in line when it comes to being together on an issue, that they have to.
And some, and sometimes it's also performativity too, right? Like, because I know, like, and I've had many conversations with people in the past about like efforts when it comes to social awareness, like it can't just be something that you check off a box for, like it's something that you need to sustain and invest in and care about. Right. Let's see. Taylor says there is some lack of compassion for those honestly going through the process. Like gender representation wise, you have to understand lots of people are still learning not to default to pronouns they learned growing up, and being patient with honest mistakes as an example. So like, no, that's a good point that you made too, because I know I've had this conversation before, like, especially with regard to like cancel culture, things like that, because like, obviously like we live in a time where like holding people accountable for those mistakes is important, but like, it's what we do after that that really defines like the rest of the process, right? Like, do you just cancel that person, or if they're accountable, do you allow them to grow from the experience and better themselves, right? So I would say that that might be one part of the process that may go too far. Like if somebody does make a mistake, what do we do? What do we do to allow that person to grow as a result? Does that make sense?
Yeah. But like, here's the thing. Remember when we had all Democrats in power, we voted all of the Democrats in power, all of the House, the Senate, and the presidency, were all Democrat. Everybody was in power. Remember this? It was like a couple years ago. And we wanted $15 an hour. Remember minimum wage? We said, go sick up. We said, sick up. You can push it through. And they faltered. And they didn't do it. They said they were going to do it. They made platforms about it. They said they were going to do it. And those slimy Democrats did not do it. They said they were going to do it, and they lied, and they didn't do it. And that's, I was super mad about it, because I was like, they said they were going to do it, and they didn't.
It's kind of similar to the whole like student debt thing right now, like with like the student loan forgiveness situation, because had they gone at it a little bit more rigorously, something would have been done. But it was kind of like,
it's sort of like they're like, we're gonna knock it out. You know what it reminds me of? You remember that? You know that? Does anybody know who the cake lady is on Facebook? We just twist and lift. And lift. It's that lady. She never does it. She just will tease you for 20 minutes, and then it makes a goopy mess. We'll just twist and lift. She does that.
I love that parallel.
I feel like that's what the Democratic Party is sometimes with their unity. Mm-hmm. They say it's sort of like, I'm gonna knock them out, and they go,
Right. The performativeness, like I think some of it is just so performative, whereas like the action is really what's necessary, right? So Taylor mentions, quote, they're responsible for their own research, but how are they learning to research if nobody taught them or nobody's willing to teach them? Excellent point. That's actually kind of that falls in line with one of our questions, right? I think we have a question about that. Does fallout from emotional labor, like just telling people that Google is free and forcing them to do self-work, make it so that there's a problem with people wanting to get into that point of entry when it comes to like discovering like that that social awareness, right?
Oh my God, with my mom. So my mom is like, I want my mom to be a better person. And I want, for an example, because my mom is a boomer and my mom says things that are not great. And I want her to do the work, but it's sometimes you just got to, sometimes you just got to spoon feed information of like, this is this thing you're doing or this thing you're saying is not right. And it's sort of like, mm-hmm. I want you to do the research. I want you to read these books, but also at the same time, my mother does not read. My mother does not care about this stuff. It's sort of like, sometimes you just got to spoon feed that information to the people that are around you because they will not do the research on their own. And so it's difficult because I know that I know that her heart is in the right place, that she wants to, that sometimes she wants to change and that she might not understand where the information is. Like she wouldn't, like she doesn't know. My mother says that she has a Black friend, which is problematic in and of itself, but she has not talked to this Black friend in over 20 years, first of all. Second of all, but that's what I say in the last episode, that just listening to say Black people or just
well, that harkens back to our tokenism episode.
but just having more Black friends to listen to their problems and just knowing what's being on social media and just listening to the plight of the Black community or listening to the plight of the BIPOC community, like me being on Twitter or like me being on TikTok, you being ingratiated in these communities, you start hearing about what's going on with them and what's going on in these communities, you know, kind of what's when you hear about these big national social issues or even local community issues, you start to understand what's bothering people. Like I've heard podcasts about what's going on in my local town because there have been issues that have made it to the national news in my local area. And I found out what's going on in my town based on things that have happened in the national news in my local town.
Wow. So, yeah, it's interesting that, I mean, you mentioning your mom and everything as well, because, and going back to like Taylor's prior comment about if nobody taught them or nobody's willing to teach them about like the processes, I also think that it goes beyond just teaching them like how to do their own research. I think it also has a lot to do with empathy, right? Like empathy is as much a learned thing as hate is, right? Mm-hmm. And the thing about empathy is that if you are a privileged person, like learning these different things, like it can be very uncomfortable for some people, right? Like because it challenges these systems that they've been entrenched in for so long. And the moment they kind of start feeling that discomfort, they recoil away and they're like, oh, you know, nothing's happening. Nothing's wrong. Nothing's going on. Type of thing. And I think that process stops right there because of that amount of discomfort, right? But I think part of that empathy, that learned empathy, is moving past that discomfort in order to understand that like if we have to make changes, like it's not going to feel good, but we're doing it for the betterment of ourselves and also the people around us who may not have the privileges that we have.
Right. And you know, I do tarot readings. It's called part of being like generational curse breakers. And so part of that is like you're breaking all of these like generational curses of like systemic racism and patriarchy. And these are not things that are easily undone. This is going to take long, arduous work and consistent regular work with the people around you over and over and over again. And that,
well, I was just gonna say, like, even in our last episode, I think you mentioned that like we still struggle with some of those systems, right? Because like as we're growing, those systems are also growing and changing too as society shifts and changes. So like it's almost like this constant process where you have to be vigilant about like understanding those systems and like the harm that those systems do and what parts we play.
And I'm wondering how it's
perpetuating or disarming them.
Well, I'm wondering how it's going to evolve as white people become more of the minority group in the future, because Black, you know, the BIPOC community is supposed to overtake the percentage wise by 2050. And I'm wondering how that's supposed to, how systemic racism is going to affect that number, that public perception and things like that, that how that's going to affect things. Right. And so I'm hoping that systemic racism gets better as far as it goes, and that there's more of an equal system, and that we can work through all of these generational curses that we've had built up as far as like systemic racism and, you know, police brutality and things like that, that we can finally work through all of these issues by that time, by 2050.
Right. So, no, I hope that things improve too. I definitely do. Taylor says, unfortunately, many young people don't understand that it's long, arduous work. They're mad people haven't moved fast enough. I agree. And unfortunately, going back to like what I was saying about like people being uncomfortable, because a lot of hate has been given a platform over the past several years, I think that's become a convenient out for many people to be like, not worrying about the work. I'm just going to treat social awareness and progress as a system of its own, because that's how it's being illustrated to me, right? By these platforms that are kind of like twisting it, you know? So it is interesting, like rhetorically speaking, how language itself can just be used to shift things, right? Mm-hmm. Now, one of the other questions is, on the other side of the coin, if people are spoon-fed all of their information, is there any incentive to become a better person, work towards the growth? Which you were kind of talking about that already, right? Like, there has to be some sort of motivating factor. There has to be.
I feel like there has to be some kind of happy medium in trying to get somebody to do some of the research on their own, as well as educating them in some sense, that you have to get them, that moving them towards the materials that they need, as well as like possibly having initial conversations with them about stuff, maybe like even just giving them like secondhand books or things like that, of things that I have read, and like giving them that information and going, hey, I've read this book, maybe you'll want to read it too, maybe we can have a discussion about it, and like go from there. And so it's not that they're doing this on their own, it's doing it together. My mother is not one of those people, though. Unfortunately, she's not going to be like, I'm not going to read this book. She's just not one of those people. Unfortunately, she's just not willing to do that amount of work, just because that's the type of person she is. But I feel like that's the unfortunate part of my family. Maybe that's the unfortunate part of a lot of families, is that you have people who are not willing to be open to reading a book or listening to a podcast or doing some, you know, because there's that sense of, again, that wokeness as an insult, that they hear these things and there's immediately defenses up of, are you calling me racist? Are you calling me a bad person? Are you going to make me feel guilty about what the things I believe? Why can't I just believe these things? You know, I don't think that I'm doing anything wrong.
And you know what? Like, I get that guilt is uncomfortable. I don't, like, it's not meant to be comfortable, right? Because you literally are disempowering these systems that have been conditioning you for your entire life, right? But, like, I feel like once a person gets past that, like, it feels a lot better, right?
It's just that they think that fairness is that it's part of that America is the greatest country in the world. And so fairness to them is always getting first place, that white people are always in the system of power. And so white people are always at the throne, and that black people and BIPOC communities are always at the seat, the bottom of the throne, waiting on them as as the caretakers of society, as say the cooks in the restaurant or the waiters at the restaurant, and they're the ones eating the meal while everybody waits on them and is catering to their comfort and needs.
Yeah.
And if they're not catered to or getting their needs comforted, then they're uncomfortable because they're not being catered to.
Yeah, they're uncomfortable because their privilege isn't prioritized in some fashion.
Right.
Which, but that's a whole nother topic too. Like, we could talk about privilege, and we have many times, and that, and the truth is, like I feel like privilege is one of the biggest things that that's weaponized in like these different systems, unfortunately. So let's see.
But that's why they try to devalue wokeness, is because it's acknowledging that privilege, because wokeness is trying to acknowledge that people have that privilege and trying to devalue that privilege from the trying to speak truth to power and trying to take that privilege away from people. And so it's this power struggle of, well, wokeness, are you woke? And it's sort of like, well, you're trying to take power away from me by acknowledging your privilege.
Right. Exactly. what's the next thing? Like, how do we pick which voices are the most important to raise up in any given time, given the intersectionality in our society? I think that's an interesting question that you pose. So
it's interesting because usually it goes by the news media, which is controlled by rich white men. Very interesting. So they usually pick what is the most in vogue. They'll pick a news story and they'll go with that. But honestly, like, so it's interesting. It's interesting what they decide, who the people in power decide what goes viral and what becomes the most in vogue thing at the moment.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones who control what goes viral. They're the ones who control what we see and what we hear and what we're acknowledging. They're the ones who are controlling those, what we acknowledge online. So with police brutality and Black Lives Matter, that was, even though we think that we got one over on the man and that we were doing those things, I think that was part of a very controlled system to make us care for a very special amount of time, that it was sort of like we cared for, that it was in vogue for a moment, and that we cared for just this tiny sliver of time, and now it's sort of like it's not popular anymore to care about Black Lives Matter or to care about police brutality or care about gun violence in this country. And so now it's slowly fallen underneath cultural awareness again. And so to me, it's sort of like all of those social issues have gone, that America is starting to go to sleep again, and that all of those things have gone, and that maybe during the election that we may get turned on again, and that we might care about politics again during the election cycle, and they'll cart all of those things out again during the election cycle. But right now, everybody is kind of asleep and just not paying attention.
Well, yeah, because of that privilege, especially like when we think of 2020 and everything happening, like, people operate under this idea of like, okay, well, especially the media, we paid our dues, we talked about this for a while, like, it's fixed, right? Ignoring the fact that, like, again, like, these systems, like, you can't snap your finger and make them not exist, right? Like, there's still violence, there's still discrimination that takes place. And I think, like we were saying earlier, because those systems still exist, like, we, that demands like a certain degree of vigilance, right? When it comes to our continued efforts and conversation with regard to those.
I mean, for a while there, it was Native Americans and building water pipelines or water rights on Native American mm-hmm. land. And that was because mm-hmm. they were actively building that. But Native American rights, Native Americans get their rights trampled on all the time by the government. And it's just because they're not actively doing something to them at this moment doesn't mean that Native Americans get their rights trampled on all the time. And that they weren't trampled on during the pandemic, say, when they weren't able to get the healthcare that they needed to not get killed off in large numbers during the pandemic. And mm-hmm. that they get their rights trampled on quite regularly, just because there isn't some kind of specific cause doesn't mean that they aren't being mistreated by the government on a regular basis.
Well, and the truth is, like, even atrocities that have happened a long time ago, like, are still, like the trauma still lingers, the damage still lingers in different ways. Mm-hmm. And it's like, people think that if you slap a Band-Aid on, you know, a very deep wound, that that's going to heal it. Like, it requires, like, consistent vigilance and tending, right? Especially when it comes to, like, people who have been the subject of violence and colonization in the past. So,
well, and they just leave these people of color and as well, they just leave them in these poorer communities that they're not able to move themselves out of mm-hmm. poverty and move themselves in an upward momentum. And so they do damage to these communities and then leave them to linger and die and mm-hmm. and not to be able to help themselves.
Absolutely. So what are some important, like, socially aware topics that are being ignored right now in America? Like, are there any, like, specific hot button issues or ones that should be hot button issues?
Well, obviously, the Don't Say Gay bills and the trans rights issues are mm-hmm. huge. I think that's probably the one that's in the forefront right now.
Right. I would also say, going hand in hand with that, like, the attack on education in a variety of different states. Like, going back to, like, talking about that empathy that we were talking about before and that education, like, that's something that's learned throughout, like, elementary school, middle school, right? If those are being attacked, how can those be sustained, right? I agree. I also think classism is a hot button issue that is going to continue building in momentum, you know, gradually.
But I think that climate change and its effects on marginalized groups, that, say, like, the Native American community, climate change and its effects on the Native American community, climate change and its effects on, say, food scarce places such as ghettos and other places that don't have, social class places that don't have grocery stores, places that mm-hmm. they get their food sources from, like, Dollar Generals and places like that. I'm talking about not being able to get fresh produce, and it's going to get even more scarce, where getting even just good viable food is going to get even more scarce as climate change ramps up.
Absolutely. I mean, just thinking, like, itself, like, the cost of living as well, like, how is that impacting marginalized groups?
Absolutely.
And with, like, the consistent widening gap between, like, the top 3% who have billions and billions and billions of dollars versus, like, the vast majority, like, and the people in poverty who, like, are growing more and more distant from that top percentage. Like, what are the ramifications with that, right? Like,
or I think, like, I, his, I, or like historic redlining having its effects on the community as far as like climate migration. How is that going to affect things?
Mm-hmm. Agreed. So if we were to end up on one final question, I'm imagining if we weren't where we are now, like having gotten to the point where we are, what advice would we give to people who are interested in these topics and wanting to pursue them and educate and grow, et cetera? Like what would your advice be?
So I think that some of the topics that we mentioned today, I feel like there's just not enough research being done about these topics or enough investigative research being done in these topics. I feel like I'm calling to the media to do more research about some of these topics that we mentioned, that looking into these issues, especially about like climate change and how it affects the marginalized communities and like how it intersects with all of these communities. And like how social topics, how these big issue topics affect marginalized communities and how it's going to affect them in the long run. But especially things like climate change, how it's going to affect certain groups as far as like the coming years, and like how social topics like as the population grows, how is it going to affect the way that systemic racism or how, you know, as the population booms, how is that going to affect the way that we interact with each other? I mean, that's a very interesting thing to think about.
No, absolutely. I think so too. I would also say, like, when it comes to wanting to pursue these topics, like, I would like the media to do more as well. I often find that sometimes I learn more by TikTok, for example. Like when you are exposed to more diverse people, like you begin to see other perspectives and understand, you know, the different adversities and successes that other people experience, right?
I'm always scared to ask questions on TikTok because I'm always afraid of like making a fool of myself.
Right. Well, again, that comes back to like that shame and guilt, right? Like, I think that we have like this mentality of like, well, we should know this, right? But, you know, so that's a really difficult thing to work through for sure. Yeah. Thank you everyone for tuning in tonight. This has been a good conversation. And well, we hope that you enjoyed it. Make sure you click like. Go subscribe to Ari's channels, Strange Nothings, Tarot Time with Ari, and
Boocha Baby.
Boocha Baby. I always mess up your water channel's name. Go check out my stuff per the usual. And of course, we will see you on the next round. So we love you all. And we hope that you have a good night. Bye.